It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It can be hard to leave an abusive home. This morning, we hear from one reporter on how the coronavirus pandemic is making it even tougher.
Pandemic basically means reduced movement across the board. People may be living with their abusers and be unable to take time off or even have an excuse to leave.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. One in four women and one in nine men experience intimate partner violence, which can include physical, mental, and emotional abuse. That's according to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Online publication 100 Days in Appalachia recently published a story about what this looks like during the coronavirus pandemic. Inside Appalachia host Jessica Lilly talked with the reporter to find out more.
Since the coronavirus pandemic and shelter-in-place orders were put in place, parts of central Appalachia are seeing abuse and neglect calls decrease significantly. Experts are worried that this could be a sign of a bigger problem. Victims are stuck in homes with their abusers with no escape. 100 Days in Appalachia reporter Allison Stein spoke with experts in local shelters to find out more in an online report called "In Appalachia, It's Always Hard to Leave an Abusive Home, Then Came a Pandemic." Hi, Allison. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you mean by "in Appalachia, it's always hard to leave an abusive home"? How are things different here than other places when it comes to escaping abuse?
Well, we have some factors about our region that may make us unique and also make some things difficult. We're more geographically isolated in parts of the region. Parts of our area are more remote, and accessing all services can be more difficult. There simply may not be as many services. They may be harder to get to. We have low rates of public transportation in many areas. So if you only have one car, it may be hard to get to help sometimes. We also have populations with lower incomes. And one of the experts I talked to talked about how if people have resources, they tend not to go to a shelter. They tend to reach out more at home.
And how is the pandemic making it harder for survivors of domestic abuse right now?
Well, the pandemic basically means reduced movement across the board. You are not going to work, many people, children are not going to school, people can't even leave the house for an errand or to get a break. People may be living with their abusers and be unable to take time off or even have an excuse to leave. Communication is also more difficult because of the pandemic. People may not have internet access at home, and libraries are closed, so you can't access the internet there. People may be running out of data or minutes on their cell phone plan. And so most of the avenues that people would use to access help are just a bit more hectic right now.
In your report, you mentioned that phone calls reporting abuse or neglect have basically stopped, not just here in Appalachia, but also in other places across the country, like in Colorado. But This is actually a concern for social workers or other abuse prevention experts, right?
Absolutely. It really means that people aren't able to reach the phone to call out for help, or that people aren't in front of mandatory reporters like teachers and coaches, or people who would see maybe signs of abuse happening and try to reach out for help. I talk about in the article, the first thing that my sister's place did when the pandemic hit this area is they started to make room. And it wasn't just that they knew they needed space between the beds and they needed to give every family their own bathroom, you know, for social distancing and safety reasons. But it was also that they did expect an increase. They expected that tensions would be running higher, people would be spending more time with their abusers, and things might come to a head. You know, people might need more help during this time than they would normally. And so they expected to have that flood of people coming. But the opposite has happened. People are less likely to be able to get out or even to feel comfortable or safe getting help. It's not a great time to leave your house, period, right? Even if you can, you know, it's not the best time to go to a hospital, even if you're hurt or need that help.
it seems kind of hard to talk about. Even as I say it out loud, my stomach kind of turns thinking about, you know, the needs and the people out there who can't get to the phone, but just in trying to see some kind of opportunity or hope. What are your thoughts about the workers getting an opportunity or a chance to catch up on some of these that have been sitting in, you know, stacks and stacks of papers for a long time?
I think that is true. I have a friend here in Appalachian, Ohio, who's a social worker, and people aren't showing up for their appointments, their counseling appointments, and that concerns her. And so she's trying to reach out to them in different ways. So I think there's two opportunities here. One is that my social worker friend, her, you know, she's using this extra time, if you will, to catch up on those backlogs, to check back in with people, to maybe revisit, you know, some old circumstances that she never followed up on, or, you know, the limited resources didn't allow her to. But I think another opportunity of this very stressful time is to maybe think about new ways to reach out and communicate. My sister's place, the domestic violence agency in Ohio, has set up a text line because they realize that even if you don't have internet at home, or you're almost out of minutes, or you have no data plan, sometimes you can still text, so people can reach out that way. A woman that I talked to who works in the social work department at Ohio University, she's an associate professor there, she talked about how this is really a time for us to check in with each other. This is really a time to, you know, call that friend you haven't talked to in a while, or knock on the house of that senior citizen and, you know, stand back on the porch and just ask if people are okay and really check in with each other. And we still do have opportunities for contact in the form of, you know, virtual calls and videos. And that's still a chance to check in on somebody and see how they're doing and just pay attention to what might be going on in their life and how you might be able to be there for them.
So for folks who might be listening who need help, the message is look for other ways to communicate rather than the traditional phone call or physically leaving. And for those of us who want to help, look for ways to, you know, pay attention to your neighbors and folks who we might know who live in these dangerous situations, and be willing to sort of reach out and help with that, is what I think I'm hearing, right?
Absolutely. And I think it's important to remember that domestic violence shelters are still open. They are classified as essential services and they're still operating. And they have gone to great lengths to keep the facilities safe and available to people that need them. So they're still there for people.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and stay safe.
Thank you. You as well.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Mostly sunny skies today in the north, increasing clouds in the south with a slight chance of rain, highs in the 60s. Slight chance of rain tonight, lows in the 40s. Partly sunny tomorrow with a chance of rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 70s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by HQ Publishing Company, publisher of Huntington Quarterly, Marshall Magazine, and other publications since 1989. HQPublishing.com. Author Bonnie Proudfoot began working on her new novel, Goshen Road, nearly 25 years ago, but she said she had to get older before she had the confidence to finish it. The story follows two sisters growing up in northern West Virginia, beginning as teens in 1967. Eric Douglas sat down with Proudfoot to discuss her story.
Describe the book for me.
So it's what they call a novel in linked narratives, which means that each chapter is almost has the drama and tension of a short story. And yet the same characters circle around through all the chapters, and it progresses forward in time. And it really, at the heart of it, is the story of two women who come to terms with who they really are. And they can look the world squarely in the eyes on their own terms. But they needed to go through a lot.
So what genre would you put this in?
So there is a whole, it is a novel because it has a trajectory and it goes forward in time, but there is a whole genre and of linked narratives. And there.
I'm thinking more basic. I mean, is this coming of age? Is this?
Oh, yeah, good question.
I mean, that sort of genre.
You could see it as Appalachian fiction is, I think, a good way to characterize it just to start. And coming of age. And female-centered fiction, right? Although not all the chapters are written right from the point of view of the female characters.
I was intrigued on the back cover, and I assume the university press people wrote the basic description, that sort of thing. But I tripped over the word, and I'm sure you can guess which one I'm talking about. Elegiac.
Yeah.
And I literally had to look it up. That's not a word I'm familiar with because it pertains to an elegy.
Right.
How does that pertain to your book?
I think that it harks back to a time past. And so in that, this book covers a time period of 1967 to 1992. Things have gotten more complicated, you know, for Appalachia. And regionally, people are confronted with, I would say, even more stressful circumstances in life in contemporary times. This harks back to the past when there was still a vestige of, like, cultural inheritance that people did canning, they went hunting, they knew how to make some form of a living off of the land, and not everything was material. They traded for things. It's an elegy a little bit in that regard. Okay. Things have gotten harder, economically speaking, since that novel.
I don't think you said specifically where this is set. I mean, it's fictional. I get that. I'm guessing northern West Virginia, right on the border with Pennsylvania would be...
You know, I didn't exactly want to say the county.
Sure.
But it, you know, if you can... I lived in Wetzel County. You can make okay. any kind of assumption. I also lived in Fairmont. And someone asked me, is Fairchance Fairmont? And my answer is, no, it's actually smaller.
Explain to me the reference of Goshen, the land of Goshen and for Goshen Road.
It's from the Old Testament, right? And if you drive up Route 79 from Fairmont to Morgantown, halfway... between Fairmont and Morgantown is the sign, it's an exit sign, it says Goshen Road.
Okay.
And almost as soon as I started working, I wrote more and more about these same characters, and they all lived together, and they were so tied to the place. And the place itself figures largely in the book, I think. It's just kind of a spiritual force, not necessarily always a easy force to grapple with, but... you know, it is the place of their inheritance. It is the place that they have to deal with. It's something that everybody who loves West Virginia knows, and deep down in their hearts, if the land isn't always going to reward you in the way that you think it should possibly, you can't tame it. And it's gorgeous. There's that, you're drawn to stay there, and it's a price you pay as well as a great blessing.
Last question, but what do you hope your readers take away from reading the book? What do you want them to feel and think afterwards?
I want them to feel like they understand folks who live in rural sections of the country, not even only West Virginia, not only Appalachian, but possibly Appalachian, how much family means, how much the land itself means, and how much they rely on each other in ways that sustain them, even if times are rough.
You hinted about it a minute ago. Will there be a sequel? Will you continue to follow this family?
So I've written some sketches, and I'll see where they go. And I'm very interested in the idea of grandparents raising grandchildren. It seems like a huge subject, and I see it all around me. And now I've sort of laid a little bit of groundwork for that. So that is a bone I'm gnawing on.
Appalachian fiction novel Goshen Road is author Bonnie Proudfoot's debut novel. The book tells the story of two women growing up in West Virginia and traces two generations of their lives. This interview is part of an occasional series with authors from Appalachia or writing about the region. You can find more author interviews on our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Brittany Patterson produces our show. Our news director is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.